Welcome back to Perfect Takes. I'm your host, Stephen Patton, joined as always by my co-host and dear friend, Jake McQuire. And today we wrap up our AFC breakdowns. We finish in the South so that the last division that we do in the NFC is also the South. Go figure. We are a Carolina Panthers podcast. But I think what's interesting, this division hosts a team or features a team that is currently hosting a joint practice between the Carolina Panthers, and that is the Houston Texans. So we'll talk about them towards the end of the show. We'll start from worst and go to first. Jacob, how you doing today?
Doing pretty well. I learned, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes ago or whenever we hopped in the call before the recording, there's no football today and it's a Thursday. So that's pretty disappointing, to say the least, but at least we'll have football tomorrow. And then I think the Panthers play Saturday, but then next week we do play on a Thursday. So I don't really understand what's happening here, but at least we can get some football this weekend.
It's nice to always just turn on the game for like 10, 15 minutes. I remember seeing a little bit of the Giants-Bills game right before the end of the first half. I've seen snippets of some of the other games. Obviously, highlights and different plays are getting broken down. And what's interesting is the Titans, they had their first preseason game, I believe, this past weekend against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Cam Ward, he showed some of his flaws. Those were definitely on display. But you also saw him, I guess, exemplify the arm that everybody's so excited about. And he also force-fed Calvin Ridley. This is a guy that was trying to get his star receiver the ball, especially on third down. Was there any big takeaway from that game or the highlights you saw to warrant any optimism for Cam Ward, any pessimism, or are we just kind of feeling the same and these preseason reps are just simply highlighting what we already knew?
Well, they are preseason reps, right? So it's not hard to overreact to them. It's hard to take them very seriously, I guess, unless it's your team and the players are playing well that you like. But as far as the Titans go, what I liked seeing in that game is how the O-line kind of coalesces. I think we can see a lot more of that in the regular season when all the starters are playing, right? Because they really reformed that O-line. You mentioned Calvin Ridley. I'm interested to see how many targets he gets this year. From a fantasy football perspective, he's been somebody that's been on my radar because they have to throw to somebody. And if you're looking at some of the other additions they brought in this year, it's guys like Van Jefferson, a guy like Tyler Lockett, a guy like Xavier Restrepo, who's an undrafted free agent, but was with Cam Ward at Miami. So somebody established has to get the targets in. Ridley is really the kind of guy that I would hone in on there. What I'm interested in is how, as a whole, the Titans are able to not only insulate, but bring their number one pick up to speed compared to how a team like the Bears did it last year. We saw how Caleb Williams struggled with the speed of the game, with pressure. 2 years ago, the Panthers, we saw how Bryce Young struggled with less than stellar receivers. The O-line rushed him, made him lose a lot of his anticipatory throws. I wonder if they can avoid a lot of the negatives and pushing Ward into kind of a, not a negative play style, but a play style that isn't as impactful offensively or in terms of winning, like doing the right thing. Hopefully they can avoid that. And I think by the way that they've reformed the O-line, I think that's a good step.
What's interesting, you just brought up the Panthers. The 2022 offensive line actually played fairly solid. What kind of sucked for Bryce Young is so many injuries decimated the interior of that offensive line. And we talk about the Titans kind of rebuilding or reshuffling that offensive line group. It's you're bringing in a couple guys, some with injury histories or getting older, and you're hoping it all works and gels together because you bring Dan Moore in, the guy I brought up last week. I think I meant to bring up Jalen Moore, who signed with the Kansas City Chiefs. But Dan Moore goes from the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was their left tackle last year while Broderick Jones was dealing with some injuries. And then now he's with the Tennessee Titans, which allows you to kick J.C. Latham back to right tackle, which is what he played in college. Peter Skoronski came on strong at the end of last year, and he's starting to look like a viable left guard. I think he's left guard. And then Kevin Zeitler is now the right guard. You brought him in from Detroit. And then Lloyd Cushenberry is coming back from injury. So that's a solid group up front to where you can go. If they stay healthy, this is an average group and should allow Cam Ward to operate an NFL offense. And I think I'm a little excited to see how it's all going to play out. The biggest thing that I think any rookie quarterback can learn, especially right out of the gate, is that you don't always have to go win the game, but you can definitely lose the game with some of the plays that you make on the field. And Will Levis was the perfect example of that last year. And so he's got to find that balance between trying to find explosive plays and not making those negative plays that are just backbreaking.
Absolutely. On the defensive side of the ball, we usually think of the Titans defense as like an underrated group or one that is able to hold up throughout the season. That wasn't necessarily the case last year. I mean, there's a reason why they were the number one pick in the draft. Their defensive EPA per play was 21st. They allowed the 30th most points. So I think getting some infusion on the defensive side of the ball was important for them as well. And I don't think they brought in world beaters, but guys like Draymond Jones, who have been a Pro Bowler before, he's played in a couple of different systems. I hesitate to say Xavier Woods because we know what he was, let's say, wasn't able to do in Carolina. But they also bring in Cody Barton, who was one of the starting linebackers for, or not starting, heavy rotation linebackers for the Denver Broncos last year. So I think that bringing guys from both the Seahawks and the Broncos, two pretty good defensive units, should inject a little bit of talent to the starting lineup. And then they had a lot of draft picks, and there's going to be a lot of young guys playing with the backups. Guys like Femi Oladejo, who they took on, I think, in the second round. And then Kevin Winston, a safety both of us liked from Penn State. They took him in the third round. So I'm interested to see how much the rookies play. But in order for this team to really be able to compete, and I don't think this team's going to win the division by any means, I think the defense has to get back to being the underrated, like, 10th through 12th defense or something like that. I don't know if that's on the table, but as far as expectations go, if they want to be competitive, that has to happen. And I think that the true goal for this season should be what we're talking about, getting Cam Ward acclimated to NFL speed.
I like that you brought that up. Out of all the Mike McDonald prodigies from that 2023 Baltimore Ravens defensive coaching staff, Denard Wilson's probably been the most disappointing. He had a decent amount of talent. I think he underproduced compared to what we saw with Anthony Weaver in Miami, obviously Zach Orr in Baltimore down the stretch, and Mike McDonald was the stud we knew him to be out in Seattle. So I'm hoping you have Legarius Sneed, a guy that can help take away a third of the field. He's a physical cornerback. I think they brought in Awuzie to kind of play the slot role. You can kind of maybe feel good about how that patchwork's coming on the back end. Where I have the main concern is, like, how are you generating pressure off the edge? I love Tavondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons in the middle. To me, that's how you're going to win in the defensive line, is being able to stop runs up the middle and then be able to collapse the pocket through the middle as well. So those two players, I think, are going to be the linchpins for any success on that side of the ball. And you really just need some production from some of their edge rushers. Like, they lost Harold Landry, and the rest of the guys on that roster really aren't, I think, going to cut it to where you're going to be able to count on them, especially on third down. So going back to the offensive side, I think there's a lot more optimism there. This is a offensive head coach, Brian Callahan, coach underneath Zach Taylor, obviously son of Bill Callahan, the famous offensive line coach who is there in Tennessee as well. So that's where I think when we talk about the Titans this year, especially where you brought up they just had the first overall pick, we need to see a step from that group. And then the defense, you can address pass rushers, maybe some depth in the linebacker room or secondary, in order for that unit to take a step so that in a couple of years, you're making a push for the AFC South or a wild card spot.
For sure. The last thing I'll say about the Titans is that they have a very weird schedule. No national TV games, which is kind of disrespectful to a first overall pick, but they have big stretches of three or more road games in a row and stretches of three or more home games in a row. Like in the middle from week 9 to week 13, all of them are home games. There's a bye week in there, but four straight home games is kind of weird. I don't think I've ever seen that before. So I felt like I had to mention it. So I don't know about buying and selling with this team. Calvin Ridley would be the guy I would think about. But other than that, I think we've covered the Titans pretty well.
Cam Ward, it's interesting because, like you said, that they have no national games. Yeah, like national.
Like primetime games.
Your Monday night football, your Thursday night football. all those where like everybody's eyes are on you because there's no other games going on. And what's interesting, I think the Panthers in 2011, Cam's rookie year, was kind of the same. And not to say that they're the same. I think Cam Newton had a lot more press than Cam Ward has, but Cam Ward has not been discussed, and he's the first overall pick. You would think there's a little bit more hype from the national media, and it just seems like everybody's just, I guess, beating old topics that have been discussed all offseason. We can't talk about anything else, myself included. But I think when we talk about a quarterback who has had a lot of press about him as a first overall pick, and has been somewhat disappointing to this point in his career, it's Trevor Lawrence. This was the golden boy coming out of college. Everybody thought he was the next Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck. And he definitely shined his second year when Doug Peterson came in and cleaned up the Urban Meyer mess. But since then, it's just kind of been disappointment after disappointment. Does that change at all with Liam Cohen and Travis Hunter now in the building?
I don't know if it fully changes the outlook of this team, but certainly they're going to be much better and I think much more disciplined. This is a team that Lawrence only played about half the games. He won two, Mac Jones won two when he was in there, but they were 4-13 as a whole. The offense was 20th or below on almost every single efficiency and total metric. The lone bright spot, Brian Thomas Jr., he was able to shine, but he couldn't really carry anything by himself because it was just him. I like the weapons as far as guys like Travis Hunter, Brian Thomas. I think Etienne and Tank Bigsby will get more from Liam Cohen, who diversifies his run game. My biggest hang up with this team, and it's not just with the offense, but this team as a whole, is that offensive line. I really don't trust the starting five that they have out there. And I think that if they can't be a serviceable unit, let's say like top 20 or something like that, I don't think it matters how good the pass catchers are, how good Trevor Lawrence gets back to being. I think that offensive line is going to hamstring them. So I don't know if Cohen can save him or anything. But
fall calls for comfort. Mack Weldon's got essentials designed for cool days and timeless style. Their new Ace line combines comfort with sophisticated looks. Go to MackWeldon.com for 20% off your first order of $125 or more with code MACK25.
I think bringing Cohen in is a good start. I just don't know if we're going to be looking at like a 10-win team this year or anything.
What I will be very curious to see with Liam Cohen, because you are right, he is leaving a situation where you had a top five, top 10 offensive line group. You had a lot of stability there. You had arguably one of the best, if not the best, left tackle in Tristan Wirfs. You don't have that in Jacksonville. And that limits, I think, some of what your offense can do. But when you look at specifically the time to throw and average depth of target that Trevor Lawrence had, I think he had one of the shortest time to throws. He was like top 10. And when you look at average depth of target, I believe he was like top three, if not the only guy behind like Anthony Richardson. Like, it was insane. I think it was like close to 10 yards, over 10 yards. And that just goes to show, like, this guy was dropping back and then just throwing past the sticks to some of those digs and curl routes. And I think with Liam Cohen, especially with what he did in Tampa Bay, he's going to utilize the quick game a little bit more to where Trevor Lawrence isn't having to push the ball that far downfield right out of the gate. He can drop back, dump it off to the screen, and let his playmakers do their thing. And I think if you can take some of that pressure off Trevor Lawrence and allow him to be special with some of the throws he can pinpoint downfield, then you might be cooking with some gasoline here. But that's what I want to see first and foremost is, does Liam Cohen and his short game and the screen game that we saw from Tampa Bay last year, does that translate to Jacksonville? Or do we go back to the point that you initially made? Is the offensive line just going to hamper everything they attempt and it's not going to look near anything what we saw in Tampa Bay last year?
Yeah, you're right. He was third in time to throw, and a lot of it was because he kind of needed to. And combine that with, he was just outside the top 10 in depth of target. He was 11th. I pulled that up just because I knew that Bryce Young was up there, so I wanted to plug that. And because while Richardson was first, do you know who number two was?
Was it Penix? Or does
it was Joe Flacco. So both of the Colts QBs were 1 and 2 in depth of target. It's an interesting note before we move, or we'll talk about that later with the Colts, but you're right. Like Trevor Lawrence had to do that because that's kind of what, how the offense was set up. The offensive line really couldn't hold up for him, and hopefully stuff will change. On the other side of the ball on defense, I went into 2024 thinking that maybe the Jaguars defense could prop up the offense. They were actually much worse. While the offense was around 20th and everything, defense was closer to 30th out of 32 and a lot of defensive metrics, which is disappointing because you have guys like Trayvon Walker, guys like Josh Hines Allen, a lot of talent on that side of the ball, but they weren't able to materialize even with Ryan Nielsen, who had a decent year calling plays for the Falcons, defensive plays, I should say. They just couldn't get it done. So they have a new defensive coordinator this season, Anthony Campanile, I believe is how you say it, who was a linebackers coach last year. So hopefully he can have a better perspective there. But outside of guys like Jordan Lewis and Eric Murray, who are slated to start, I think they're going to be relying on a lot of returning younger talent. And I don't know if they have the horses there to go from one of the worst in the league to being able to play complementary football with a new offense, especially when your new head coach is an offensive guy, right? There has to be a lot of philosophical change, I think, on defense in order for them to be able to compete.
So the Packers defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley, I'm trying to remember where he coached in college, but
it was Boston College.
Yeah, I was going to say Wake Forest. I'm like, that's the wrong ACC school. Coached at Boston College for a few years, goes to Green Bay, becomes their defensive coordinator. And in a similar vein of thought to what you just said, the Packers had a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball, at least from like a draft capital standpoint. And it seemed like they weren't getting a lot of like production from that unit. Jeff Hafley comes in and they start performing well. And the goal would be in year two, they take another step. So you take the linebackers coach from kind of that tree. He was the run defensive coordinator as well. And you're hoping that, hey, maybe he can get them fundamentally sound in terms of just filling the gaps, stopping the run, setting the edge, doing what you have to so that you can try to make offenses one-dimensional. And like you said, this is a offensive-led team with their head coach being Liam Cohen. So I think as long as they can be a bend don't break unit on that side of the ball and Liam Cohen can do what he wants to and the offensive line is not a roadblock, that this could be a team that finds itself in the race for the AFC South title. This has been a division that all you need is about 10, maybe 11 wins. And I think it's definitely possible because we're not that far removed from this team starting a year 8-3 and then just falling apart. And Doug Peterson got fired in Philadelphia after the Super Bowl run, after that magic wore off and some of the coaches started getting hired elsewhere, it fizzled out. So maybe this breath of fresh air and new life helps Jacksonville turn the page. But I think for the most part, people need to be a little bit more pessimistic, especially with, I think, the lack of development from Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm there on contend for the division. I think they should improve, but this was a team that won 4 games last year, right? This wasn't a, like, we'll talk about the Colts in a few minutes. The Colts were 8-9, right? Just on the bubble, the outside looking in. The Jags weren't close to that. And obviously Lawrence gets hurt, but when he played, they weren't good either. It's not as if he were playing at his 2022 level where he looked like he might be taking a step to being an MVP candidate, like from there on. I think as far as who I'm looking for X factors outside of Trevor Lawrence, because it's going to come down to him, X factors, buying and selling in fantasy, that kind of thing. The running backs, ETN and Tank Bigsby, I talked about when we started the Jags segment here that the run game was much more diverse when Liam Cohen took over. And it wasn't just because the O-line got better, which it did. They had different types of running backs that they could use. Bucky Irving, Sean Tucker, and Rashad White. I think between Travis Etienne, Tank Bigsby, and the rookie Bishaw Tooten, I wonder how all three of those guys are going to get used to the best effect in this run game. Because we've seen ETN fall off a little bit over the past couple of years. We've seen Tank Bigsby come in and start like a really good 2-game stretch, and then he kind of tapered off as well. Also because the team had to throw like every single down. I wonder how the trio of running backs is going to get used and if it'll be as efficient as it was in Tampa Bay.
I think the X factor at the end of the day is, can Trevor Lawrence hit Brian Thomas on some of these deep balls a little bit more consistently? The guy's getting open. You added Travis Hunter, who's going to open up some things for him as well. He is your playmaker. Like, he is going to be a guy that is talked about with your Justin Jeffersons, Jamar Chases, Nico Collins, AJ Browns. Like, your elite top five wide receivers, Brian Thomas is going to start entering those conversations. He's just that talented. When you look at his physical traits, when you look at how he produced in college and how he produced with Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones in the dysfunctional Jacksonville Jaguars situation last year, like, it's just mind-blowing. Like, there's no reason why he was putting up numbers like that. And so for me, that is the X factor, is because if you want to keep winning games, you have to keep punishing teams for not being able to cover him. And then when guys have to play 2-4 high shells, that's where Liam Cohen's screen game and some of this quick game comes alive, because now you have extra blockers against fewer defenders, opening up gaps for big explosive plays. And like you talked about, that running back trio they have in Jacksonville, it's going to be very interesting to see who does what. Is Tank Bigsby your early down kind of back? Does ETN come in those more third down situationals? And then do you work tuning in various game situations to get more explosive plays? So again, things that kind of keep an eye on, but they're on the up and up. For me, the next team that we're talking about, even though they've won 8-9 games the past couple of years, this almost feels like kind of the end of the Frank Reich era, where it's like you found ways to win games, get really close to the playoffs, but then it just all just pulls apart at the seams. And this Anthony Richardson situation has been a huge debacle since he's been drafted. Daniel Jones does not look better in the Colts situation compared to where he was playing with the Giants. So that doesn't give you like cause for hope. So like, where does this team find inspiration, or do they hit a wall and do they just give up on the season? Because like, I could definitely see things unraveling for this unit. I have liked some of what I've heard from like a breakdown standpoint of how Tyler Warren will kind of take this RPO offense from like a college looking offense to more pro style because of the physicality he brings on kind of the over the middle field passes that open up with some of this play action on that RPO. What are your thoughts about this team? Do you think they're right where they have been the past couple of years and they just need a couple of things to break right for them? Or are they on the verge of disaster?
On offense, for sure, they're right where they have been, right? I'm going to do a shameless self-promo here. I have 32 articles coming out pretty soon, one for each team, about like off-season progress reports. And the subtitle I wrote for the Colts was, who will win the quarterback competition? And you'll like this part. And in the end, does it even matter? A reference to one of Steve's favorite songs there. I don't know if it's one of your favorite songs, but in the end, does it matter if it's Daniel Jones or Anthony Richardson? I don't think it does. They're not the same player by any means, but I think they're similarly ineffective, or not as effective as they probably could be. Similarly, haven't lived up to their top six draft pick billing, right? Daniel Jones is number six. So as far as the offense goes, I think Tyler Warren is like the bright spot. I liked how they used him in the preseason game. He was used as in a more traditional role than he was in college, which was going to happen because his usage rate in college was pretty insane. But I think he can be the bright spot there. For me, what I'm looking at and trying to build hope for this team is the defense. The defense last year, the front seven was fine by most stretches. They were 12th in EPA per play, 9th in success rate. They don't have star pass rushers, but as a unit, they're able to get after the quarterback and generate pressure. But that secondary was really, really bad. But this offseason, they spent big money on Charvarius Ward from the San Francisco 49ers, the corner, and Cam Bynum, the safety from the Vikings, both of who are going to be plug-and-play starters. So taking those two with Kenny Moore, who's one of the better nickel corners in the league, I think can take the defense from, let's say, 14th overall to maybe something like 8th or 9th. And I think that's where you can start to find inspiration, is if the defense can be much more sound. I think the offense won't have to play Hero Bowl as much. The hang up there is that Lou Anarumo is now the play caller. And if you know anything about Lou Anarumo and how we view him on this podcast, it's not great as of recent years, right? So while it was Mike Caldwell or Gus Bradley last year who gets you about league average, I don't know if Lou Anarumo's scheme or his schematic presence will give the defense any like.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy. Just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.
Buffs or any improvement there? But I think the actual talent on the defense got better, and that's where I would start if I'm looking for a positive outlook about this Colts team this season.
Prior to this offseason, what would you say is like the bright spot on that secondary?
Yeah, prior to this, Kenny Moore is what I would say.
I like the fact that you add a physical corner. And we talked about this, I think, with the Chiefs last week. You had Legarius Sneed at one point, your physical lockdown guy. You had Trent McDuffie, who could kind of go all over the field. And it just opens things up for you as a defense. So, like, Kenny Moore being that guy in the nickel where he can kind of range and do his thing. Cam Bynum as a free safety, excellent from what we saw with Minnesota last year. You know that Lou Anarumo is going to be able to get a lot out of a player like that, especially when you saw how he worked with a guy like Jesse Bates. And then you get a lockdown corner on the other side, a guy that can be more physical on the perimeter. And if those guys stay healthy, I feel a lot more confident about the communication on the back end compared to what we've seen in previous years with Lou Anarumo, where it's like you can't develop young talent. Like, you're not getting these guys to play on the same page. I don't have that question or concern with the secondary. Now, on the front seven, it's like you got some good depth. I think you have DeForest Buckner, a few other guys on the defensive line where it's like, okay, we might be able to generate pressure, but it's like you need like Leetu Latu to come on this year. Like, he needs to like rise to a guy that's getting 10 or 12 sacks. Like, he's got to get after the quarterback and make a difference. And if that doesn't happen, I don't think this defense is going to play at a high enough level to offset, I think, some of the issues we're going to see on offense, because it's not that the offense isn't talented enough. It's that I'm worried that the quarterback that they have is not going to be able to get these guys the ball. Like, Adonai Mitchell, he was open all of last year, and I think he's gotten better this year. It doesn't mean that the quarterback's going to be able to get him the ball. And the same goes with Alec Pierce, Michael Pittman. Like, are those guys going to get fed the ball, or is it just going to be handoffs to Jonathan Taylor and getting Tyler Warren the ball in space? And if that's really just the recipe for success, those are your two X factors for the Colts, Jonathan Taylor and Tyler Warren. Because I don't trust Daniel Jones or Anthony Richardson to accurately and consistently get these other wide receivers the ball to warrant them being difference makers.
Yeah, I'm with you. Looking at we'll call it the starting 11 on offense. If this team had like a, maybe not last year Kirk Cousins, but a 2023 Kirk Cousins, you'd feel way better about this team's prospects.
That interior offensive line, though, is a little bit worrisome. Like,
it is, but they're replacing from the, and like, they aren't bringing new people in. It's people that have been in the system, I think, is the hope there. Plus, they just extended Braden Smith, the right tackle. I have no qualms about the left side of the O-line either. But yeah, it's getting the quarterback or the playmakers the ball. I was looking at the ADOT numbers that we referenced earlier, and while Richardson was one and Flacco was two from last year, Anthony Richardson's average depth of target was 12.19 yards down the field. Flacco, who was second, came in at 8.93. The gap between those two is the same from second to scrolling down. Actually, I think the gap between first and second is greater than second to Tua, who's the lowest of qualified quarterbacks, 250 or more plays. So that's the difference you're seeing with a guy like Anthony Richardson in terms of pushing the ball down the field. The difference is he misses them. Like, he's not hitting those guys. And all credit to Adonai Mitchell. The few times he did hit him, he ended up dropping him too. It was just a lose-lose situation there. I think Daniel Jones is probably going to be a little bit better in that regard. But I think Jones probably will have just as many, like, boneheaded plays, we'll say, or, like, takes a bad sack or fumbles. We know how much Daniel Jones likes to fumble when he's in the pocket. So I'm not sure that in the end it does matter who wins the quarterback contest. If you had to guess who it would be, who would you say? I think Daniel Jones is going to start the year personally, especially with the pinky injury, right, in the preseason game. But I just don't think it matters, to be honest.
You brought up accuracy and you brought up average depth of target. Typically, like, your accuracy goes down the further downfield you're throwing the ball. There's just too many variables going on to precisely usually put it where the wide receiver can get it. It's not going to get knocked away from, like, a defender. You have time to make a throw like that. But Anthony Richardson, his completion percentage, like, of like 20 plus yards, 15 plus yards, isn't terrible compared to league average. He's just so bad at throwing anything from like 0 to 9 yards or some of that intermediate area. And when you can't throw in those like regions, that's where the majority of passes happen in the NFL. It's not about these 20 plus yard throws. Like, everybody remembers when Anthony Richardson threw that bomb to Alec Pierce. I think it was like in week 2 against the Houston Texans. Gorgeous. That's like one play an entire game. Like, the rest of the game, you have to be able to operate and take what the defense gives you. And he's just not there. And because of that, I think Daniel Jones wins the job because he can't hit those deep shots. He's never been able to. But he can somewhat operate in that short range, that intermediate range, to where it's at least functional, to where, like, you can get a little bit of production out of this. But like you said, it's going to go back to, like, then is he making boneheaded decisions just like Anthony Richardson was last year? And that's costing you the game, and you're not putting yourself in a position to where you're competing for this division. And that's what I'm afraid of. There's a lot of shuffling pieces here, and all it takes is one or two things to go wrong. And I feel like this bursts at the seam. You lose kind of lose the team's respect. And it, like, that's how you lose seasons. And the owner just died. Like, this is not a franchise that has any sort of stability right now. So without a vision, without an identity, that's what has me concerned about this team.
I'll say it's not the worst situation for a rookie next year to go into. So that could be something optimistic for the future. You buying or selling, or I guess just buying anybody in fantasy football here? I kind of like Tyler Warren for what he can do in this offense. I think he's going to get a lot of looks. But other than that, I'm not a fan of very many of the options there.
I think Tyler Warren is priced a little high. He has the ability to potentially go off, and I'm not going to take that away from him. But like I said, I would lean either him or Jonathan Taylor. If you want to take a late round, like in between like rounds like 11 and 15 in fantasy world, like on Adonai Mitchell, I'm high on him just simply because he can separate, and maybe he just gets so open, it doesn't matter how much of a duck of a pass you throw, he's able to get it. But again, like that, like it, there's very little to like about the offensive side because of the quarterback position.
For sure. I think that's going to take us into the team that is hosting our Carolina Panthers today. The team that some might say got cooked by the Panthers in practice today. That's the Houston Texans. They've had an interesting past, 20 months to say the least, or I guess 23 months because we're almost here at the season. The offensive line reshuffling is a given, right? O-line was really, really bad last year, but the defense stepped up. They were one of the best in the league. I would say pretty universal top five, right? And a lot of those defensive players earned extensions. Derek Stingley obviously got the big payday, $90 million, $89 million guaranteed. They told him he's got to earn that last $1 million out of the $90 he got. Danielle Hunter got an extension as well, it was going to make the Trey Hendrickson deal difficult, but then Myles Garrett and TJ Watt got extended. But they also brought in a lot of people. Christian Kirk is there now. Cam Robinson, who, let's say, stepped in and played for the Vikings after Darisaw went down, he's there now. Trent Brown, the huge tackle, is there now. They draft Ariante Ursary, who was a tackle in college. So they brought in O-line players. They've also brought in a lot of wide receivers. What are you thinking for the Texans this year, who Let me like read off their offensive stats from last year. 24th in EPA per play, 31st in success rate, and 19th in points per game. Not a good offense. And I think we know the main culprit was that line. How are you feeling about them this year?
While I talk about them, you should pull up the numbers from his rookie year, because they were middle of the pack as well. But what made it exciting is this team was just picked second overall, and they're an average offense, and the defense is good enough to where they win the division, and they're playing a playoff game, and they win the first one, and then they get stomped in the divisional round by tougher competition, by a better team. And so when we talk about this Houston Texans team and the problems that have derailed them the past several years, it's going to be the offensive line. They had the highest amount of unblocked pressures last year. And that's not going to cut it. You can't have free runners to the quarterback. And so you go from Bobby Slowick, who he does come from the Kyle Shanahan tree, where it's like, one, a lot of times you don't care about who's necessarily out there. They're okay with having a left tackle. So in the case of Kyle Shanahan, it was like, he got his Trent Williams. In the case of Mike McDaniel, it was Laremy Tunsil. Was it Laremy Tunsil?
It was Teron Armstead.
Teron Armstead, yeah.
They had Laremy Tunsil. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was like. I knew he was there in Miami, but he went to Houston and now he's in Washington. It was, like you said, Teron Armstead, who was originally with the Saints. He just retired. But that idea of like, okay, the Texans had that Laremy Tunsil. Bobby Slowick couldn't make it work. These guys were not playing together. When you run a lot of outside and inside zone, the issue is you're asking the offensive linemen to do a lot. They have to move and get leverage. And if that doesn't work and you're not able to blend kind of the run and pass, and the guys they had up front weren't good. My thing is the guys that they brought in to replace them, nobody else in the league wanted or thought were good. They were free agents for a reason. So it's like, hopefully some of the guys that you drafted step up and play well, but I don't feel very good about this group compared to what it was last year. And it's like, okay, they added a couple wide receivers to replace kind of the production that they lost from Stephon Diggs and have some, I guess, insurance if Nico Collins goes out again. But I don't think that fixes the main issue. And so you have to go to the Texans offensive coordinator. And in this case, this guy comes from Sean McVay. He's Nick Cayley. And I think you're going to see more gap run schemes. And from that, just simpler pass protection schemes to where it should simplify what they have to do on a down by down basis. But these guys aren't good up front. And so if they aren't able to play well, are we going to see anything different than we saw the past 2 years? This is an average offense. Do they do enough to be top 10? And the defense is top five. But if you don't have a top 10 offense, I don't think you can make a legitimate run in the playoffs.
And you brought up the run game, right? And how they're probably going to shift it around this season because different philosophies. One's a McVay guy. Slowick was
do more man duo instead of inside zone. Just it's simple things like that on a down by down basis.
For sure. I'm actually a bigger fan of the Sean McVay thought principle, his coaching tree, than the Shanahan tree. So I have some optimism there. The run game last year, especially down the stretch, that was really a productive source of their offense in some games. Joe Mixon was pumping out 90, 100-yard games pretty easily. Joe Mixon's injured right now. There's a hesitation if he'll start the season. They brought in Nick Chubb, who he played last year but had the horrific injury 2 years ago. And they drafted Woody Marks from USC. So some new faces in the running back room. I don't know who's going to...
I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for this hyper amount of benefits mentioned here.
Be the main guy there, but they're going to have to find a main ball carrier because they're going to have to rely on this run game because of that O-line. A lot of the emphasis was all the receivers they brought in. And I like how they attack the receiver room, especially because I don't expect Tank Dell to play at all this season, right? They lose Tank Dell and Stephon Diggs, and they bring Christian Kirk, who injury prone himself, but he can be kind of a gadgety player. And then the two rookies from the same school, the two Iowa State receivers, who I think can both play pretty early. So I think that they have the pass catchers figured out. It's just, how is the O-line going to work and how's the run game going to be built off of it? I agree with you. If they can't get a stable run game, this is going to be another average to potentially below average offense, like as a whole from them this season. And it's disappointing because CJ Stroud had the really good rookie year. And I don't want to say he's like being a wasted potential, but if you have another bad offensive season and the defense can't offset it, how's that going to work out? We saw the defense could get them to the playoffs because this division just stunk last year. But they, again, they got stomped when a real team showed up, not Herbert throwing, what was it, three interceptions and a fumble or something like that. I think they got fortunate in that game. But to the defensive side of the ball, I have a ton of optimism for this unit this year. They got better to me, it seems like. They bring in CJ Gardner-Johnson, who survived an injury scare. He's not going to miss the season, which was the thought. And I think that plugging him in as one of the safeties in the back really helps the communication back there. And at all three levels of this defense, they have dudes. And I think it starts with the guys up front and Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. You and I both believe Will Anderson could win Defensive Player of the Year this year. I think if he takes a step, this defense could go from something like, we'll say fifth, to something like second or third.
He will be the difference maker on that side. I think Stingley is capped out at this point. Like, obviously he could probably bring his play up a little bit, but you talk about a player that could put that unit over the top, it is going to be Will Anderson. And so if he takes a step and he just becomes unstoppable, it does alter kind of how you're able to play teams. But it goes back to the offensive side. Are you able to run the ball? Are you able to protect CJ Stroud? CJ Stroud was making a lot of errant throws, especially down the stretch. He's got to be more accurate. You can get the best pass catchers in the world. The Chicago Bears are a great example of that last year. If Caleb Williams can't hit the broadside of a barn, then like it doesn't matter. And so I think that's the other thing to consider is you have to make sure CJ Stroud is comfortable. He's delivering passes that he can make. That makes sense. I was listening to Mina Kimes' podcast today, and she brought up a phenomenal article that was done kind of about Bryce Young. And when he came back from being benched, Dave Canales used empty, allowed him to be the point guard that David Tepper kind of alluded to when they drafted Bryce Young to be, rather than trying to do some of this under center play action stuff that Russell Wilson did a lot in Seattle. And so when you can tailor an offense to your quarterback and their strengths, that's what I'm looking for with Nick Caley. Can you simplify this to make the offensive line's job a little bit easier? Can you, like you pointed out, establish the run? And then does CJ Stroud take the step that we all thought he was going to take from the rookie year to his sophomore year? And if that jump doesn't happen, I think he's going to be like talked about almost like a Trevor Lawrence. And it almost goes to, is he a wasted talent? Is he not seeing things the right way? So I think a lot of that will be discussed as the season goes on, as we figure out what Houston's capable on that side of the ball. But there's just things to kind of be aware of, because I don't think this is something that would blindside me, but I could see it blindsiding a lot of other people, because we just drafted two wide receivers. We added all this talent, and we're not seeing any fruit from it outside of the same offensive production we've seen the past 2 years.
And you bring up a good point. I'm trying to think of what kind of offense suits CJ Stroud the best. And I would imagine it's built off of the run game, kind of like what we saw his rookie season. But even going back to Ohio State, it's such a hard thing to compare, because the Ohio State players were just better than everybody else, especially like the receivers, the offensive line. All the guys he had with the O-line and his receivers are all in the National Football League now. It's like it's a different level there. So I would hope that we're looking at more play action stuff this year and a more diverse run game, like you're saying. But if the O-line can't hold up on play action, then I think you bring up a good point that it might not even matter. And this might be another, it sounds so bad to say, another 10-7 season and they make the playoffs. Ooh, but for a team, I think that should have higher expectations, that might be a bit internally disappointing. As far as, do you have something?
Well, I was about to say, I was like, it almost gets a little bit comparable, especially in the AFC side. Now they're winning playoff games, so it's a little bit different, but it's very similar to like Andy Dalton and the Bengals. Like they would always make the playoffs. They get in there, they do their thing. They look good during the regular season, win like 10, 11 games. And then they fizzle out, and it's just, can they get over that hump?
With the, that's actually a good comparison, the 2010s Bengals, because they had some decent defenses to start there too. But with that comparison, well, they had guys like Tyler Eifert, AJ Green to throw to down in and down out. You buying any of the new pass catchers in addition? I mean, we know what Nico Collins can be. He's probably a top eight receiver, maybe top 10. Do you buy any of the newer players that are going to be there? Like Jaden Higgins, is he going to be a guy? Do you think Christian Kirk is going to have a decent target share? Who are you looking at there?
You see wide receivers, like once they get banged up and they're past their prime, and unfortunately that's where Kirk is in his career, he might get a lot of targets. He might be productive. I just don't see that, especially when you have a guy like Jalen Noel in the building, or Noel. I don't know if it's Noel or Noel. But he's a guy that intrigues me from the slot. I don't know if I'm necessarily buying any stock. I would for Nico Collins. This guy, whenever he's on the field, is getting his targets, is doing what he needs to be an elite wide receiver. But outside of that, there's not a lot that excites me, because again, I'm trying to figure out how this offense jumps into the top 10. I don't see what they did this offseason getting them there. Now, if they fix the offensive line next offseason, like you said, these pass catchers take a step and that room's fixed and you fix the O-line, maybe it all comes together and looks the way it's supposed to. I'm a little worried that it's not going to come together the way they want it to in year one.
I think the Texans' hope is that it gets to the top 20 based on how it was last year. And even if they can get there, I think they would be much more competitive in a playoff game, so to speak. I still don't think this team has the horses to beat the Mahomes, Josh Allen's, Lamar Jackson's, those kind of teams. Don't see that one happening. But as a whole, I think this is a pretty safe team to win the division. As one of the mascots of Perfect Takes makes an appearance on your camera, at least.
Yes, Ginger has entered the room looking for pets and attention. We're an hour to feeding time, but why we are in Perfect Takes, I'm going to go back to the Colts. And I'm trying to find reason for optimism, because I do like Shane Steichen. I do think Tyler Warren kind of takes this from like a college offense to an NFL offense. Some of the stuff that we saw him do in Philadelphia, he can really kind of exploit again, getting these one-on-one matchups because of how they can utilize RPOs. I'm not sold on the interior of their offensive line. I'm not sold on Daniel Jones being that dude in the locker room. And so because of that, I think they're going to end up with a top 10 pick. I think this is going to be the bottom dweller in the AFC South. I think it does come apart at the seams. Shane Steichen gets fired. I know I've hyped up their general manager. It's Chris Ballard right now, right? Yes. He'll get canned. They'll start fresh. New ownership, new management, new head coach. I think all of that'll be good, especially when you can plot, like you're saying, maybe a rookie quarterback into this situation. Like if you actually got a big physical quarterback that could throw the ball, maybe like a Drew Allar out of Penn State, if he takes a step, like maybe this is all gas, no brakes. And we're just a year removed from that. But I don't see it this year. And when you have a lot of questions around the quarterback position, those teams don't tend to win a lot of games.
I think that's fair for me. I think in this division, I would say, I think the defense is a little too good for them to drop to the last spot in the division there. So we'll have to see.
But if Tuilatu doesn't take a step, if somebody on the defense gets hurt, like I'm not, they just have no elite difference makers. They have a lot of dudes on defense, but they don't have like a guy that just puts them over the top.
Yeah. I would say DeForest Buckner is probably the closest guy there, but yeah, you do bring up a good point there. So it certainly could happen. In that same vein, I'm going to take the division as a whole. With all of, and we try to be positive, right? But there's been a lot of negativity with each of the teams today. And I think that when you have so much, or so many questions, not so much negativity about each team, but so many questions, that brings to mind that a lot of these teams might not win very many games. And so my take is, as a whole, the AFC South will have the fewest wins out of all eight divisions. I think they got close last year. I think the NFC South had the fewest last year. It might have been them, but I think it was the NFC South. But this year, I think it's for sure going to be the AFC South. I can see both Carolina and Atlanta winning more than they did last year. Tampa should have 10 wins again. But a lot of these teams, I just can't foresee them taking the step from where they were last year. And last year, for the record, it was 10 wins, 8 wins, 4 wins, and 3 in this division. So I could see, again, like 11 wins with the Texans, 7-6-4 or something like that. And that
might be the lowest. I think the AFC South was the lowest last year. We had, I think, a total of 28 wins. So we averaged 7 wins a team. And they came in 3 wins short of that with 25 total.
So more of the same, I guess, is what I'm predicting. I didn't know that was the case, but
I had to look. I was like, I knew it was those two are always at the bottom, unfortunately. It's just the way the cards fall.
Yeah, it's just maybe if they called us like the AFC and NFC Central like they do in hockey, we would be a bit better. But I think that's going to do it for us. We're going to break into the NFC next week, which I personally think the NFC divisions are more exciting to talk about, especially the one we'll start with, the NFC North. I could see 3 different teams winning 2 or more games in that one. So that's going to be a fun one. The NFC West, I think all 4 teams have good cases at that division. So that'll be a fun one to talk about as well. NFC South, obviously the Panthers, and the NFC East have the Super Bowl champs. So there's going to be pretty good topics for all 4 of them. But until we get there, you can find us on Twitter, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, wherever you get your content. Stay tuned and keep pounding.